असक्तमना पार्था योगम युञ्जाम मात आश्रयः असंशयम् समग्रम् माम् यथा ज्ञास्यसि तात् श्रीनु श्रीभगवानुवाच मयि असक्तमनः पार्था योगं युञ्जाम मदश्रयः असंशयं समग्रं मां यथा ज्ञास्यसि तच्छृणु मयि असक्तमनः पार्था योगं युञ्जाम मदश्रयः असंशयं समग्रं मां यथा ज्ञास्यसि तच्छृणु Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Lord said, Mayi, to me, asakta manaha, mind attached, partha, o son of Pritha, yogam, self-realization, yunjan, practicing, Matashrayaha,
in consciousness of me.
Asamshayam,
without doubts.
Samagram,
completely.
Mam, me.
Yatha,
how.
Gyasyasi,
you can know.
Tat, that.
Shrinu.
Try to hear.
Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Now hear, O son of Pritha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the nature of Krishna consciousness is fully described. Krishna is full of all opulences, and how he manifests such opulences is described herein. Also, four kinds of fortunate people who become attached to Krishna and four kinds of unfortunate people who never take to Krishna are described in this chapter. In the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material spirit soul, capable of elevating himself to self-realization by different types of yogas. At the end of the sixth chapter, it has been clearly stated that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest platform of all yoga. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the Absolute Truth completely, but not otherwise. Impersonal Brahmajyoti or localized Paramatma realizations is not perfect knowledge of the Absolute Truth because it is partial. But full and scientific knowledge is Krishna, and everything is revealed to the person in Krishna consciousness. In complete Krishna consciousness, one knows that Krishna is ultimate knowledge beyond all doubts. Different types of yoga are only stepping stones in the path of Krishna consciousness. One who takes directly to Krishna consciousness automatically knows about Brahmajyoti and Paramatma in full. By practice of Krishna conscious yoga, one can know everything in full, namely the Absolute Truth, the living entities, the material nature, and their manifestations with paraphernalia. One should therefore begin yoga practice as directed in the last verse of the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Concentration of the mind upon Krishna, the Supreme, is made possible by prescribed devotional service in nine different forms, of which Shravanam is the first and most important. The Lord therefore says to Arjuna, Tachrinu, hear from me. No one can be a greater authority than Krishna. Therefore, by hearing from him, one receives the greatest opportunity to become a perfectly Krishna conscious person. One has therefore to learn from Krishna directly, or from a pure devotee of Krishna, not from a non-devotee upstart, puffed up with academic education. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, this process of understanding Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, is described in the second chapter of the first canto as follows. Srinvatam svakatah Krishna punya shravana kirtana hridyantah stohya badrane vidunoti suprit satam nashta prayesva badrisu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavatyutama sloke bhaktir bhavati naistiki tadarajastamo bhavah kamalobadayoschaye cheta etarana vidham stittam satvi prasidati evam prasanna manaso bhagavat bhakti yogataha bhagavat tattva vigyanam mukta sangasya jayate. Vidyate hridaya granthis chidyate sarva samshayaha kshiyante chasya karmani drishta evatmanishvare. To hear about Krishna from the Vedic literature and to hear from him directly through the Bhagavad Gita is itself righteous activity. And for one who hears about Krishna, Lord Krishna, who is dwelling within everyone's heart, acts as the best wishing friend and purifies the devotee who constantly engages in hearing of him. In this way, a devotee naturally develops his dormant transcendental knowledge as he hears more and more about Krishna from the Bhagavatam and from the devotees. He becomes fixed in devotional service of the Lord. By development of devotional service, one becomes freed from the modes of passion and ignorance, and thus material lusts and avarice are diminished. When these impurities are wiped away, the candidate remains steady in his position of pure goodness. He becomes enlivened by devotional service and understands the science of God perfectly. Thus, Bhakti Yoga severs the hard knot of material affection and enables one to come at once to the stage of Asamshayam Samagram, understanding of the Supreme Truth, Personality of Godhead. Therefore, only by hearing from Krishna or his devotee in Krishna consciousness can one understand the science of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Shri Bhagavan Uvacham Maya Sakta Manah Partham Yogam Yunjam Madashrayaha Samshayam Samagramam Yatha Gyasyasi Tachrinu. Now hear, O son of Pritha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Kutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Miti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Devi Goravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarini Om Agyana Timirandasya Agyanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, Gita is primarily dealing with the subject matter of yoga. And yoga, as we all know, is the mystical process which is meant to connect our tiny individual soul with the Supreme Soul. Without this connection, we cannot be happy. There is no chance. Our separation with the Supreme Lord is artificial. And because of the artificiality of our situation within this world, we undergo so much sufferings. Yoga is the means to be happy. It's the only means to realize our eternal nature. Without realizing our eternal nature, which is not possible without the connection with the Supreme Lord, we cannot be happy in this world. And therefore, each and every chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called yoga. Different kinds of yogas are there, starting with Arjuna Vishada yoga. The first yoga is the yoga of depression of Arjuna. It's the yoga of desperation, of despair of Arjuna. which is the stepping stone or initial state of one's consciousness, when one acutely realizes one's incompleteness. Ultimately, every one of us is incomplete. Without connection with God, who is complete whole? One cannot be complete himself. And without this feeling of fullness, of completeness, Hare Krishna, one cannot be happy. Ultimately, every one of us is seeking for happiness. Happiness is the main problem in life. And the whole Bhagavad Gita is describing how to become happy. But the initial premise of Bhagavad Gita is that you can only become happy when you realize that you need a connection with the Supreme. Unless and until you realize this, there is no chance, there is no question of you being happy. You will try and try again and try again. You will make this attempt and that attempt, but you will be ultimately frustrated. But this frustration, in a way, if you are pious by your nature, is fruitful because it will ultimately bring you to some search, some internal kind of search for the Supreme, for the connection with Supreme. And this is what Bhagavad Gita is all about. This is what spiritual culture is all about. Spiritual culture is only about one thing. It is only about how to connect oneself with the Lord. And sixth chapter, the previous chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, is describing this glorious invention of Indian culture, which has no parallels in any other culture. Ashtanga Yoga, or Raja Yoga, the King's Yoga, the most mystical process that is. The mystical process of meditation and connecting oneself with the Supreme through internal meditation process, through Dhyana. When gradually you calm your mind. In Yoga Sutra, Patanjali starts his treatise on yoga, explaining the inner meaning of yoga, not by saying that you have to sit down in this position or that position. You know, now yoga is very popular, but usually it boils down to some kind of gymnastic. You know, people, they stand upside down and they think, yeah, I'm a yogi. You're not a yogi, you're just standing upside down. That's it. This is not the same. And it's not enough to stand upside down to realize Supreme. It's by far not the adequate method. You know, you may stand upside down as long as you want, but it doesn't bring you anywhere. Not too far, at least. It's just a very childish kind of understanding of yoga. It's Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was the first one who said, yoga is not gymnastic. It's not, you know, it's not something which you do in a gym. Yoga is a mystical process of meditation, and this is all preparatory stages which can ultimately lead you to this connection with the Supreme. But this mystical process described in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita is extremely, extremely difficult. It's a discipline. It's a very strict discipline which requires certain kind of conditions around you and a lot of determination. So Patanjali Muni, he starts his treatise saying, "Chitta yoga chitta vritti nirodha." Yoga means control the modifications of the mind. There are so many different problems within the mind. Here, Prabhupada quotes Srimad Bhagavatam, and sometimes these problems within the mind are described in yoga as grantis, or knots, within your consciousness. Sometimes the subconscious state of our existence is described as karmashaya. And karmashaya, sometimes metaphorically described as as a cloth. When we take cloth, there are so many threads. And these threads, they have certain knots, or they somehow or other, they are woven together to create the cloth. So in the same way, the cloth of our subconsciousness or consciousness has so many different little knots or little, you know, threads which are woven together to create the fabric of our consciousness. It's very difficult. It's very complicated, you know. You go to a psychologist, and psychologist will start, you know, going deeper and deeper, and he will find this knot. And if you are lucky, he will be able to somehow or other to dishevel one knot. If you are really lucky, and if the psychologist is really good, you know, he's going deeper, deeper, deeper. Here it is, you know. You know, but it's only one. There are so many of them. It's the whole fabric is there, you know. There are so many different complications, this memory and that memory, this impression, that impression, all the samskaras from our past lives, so many problems. So many times we have been dying. And this is a very traumatic experience. And it's all inside, it's all kept within us. We're all carrying all this, you know. So, yoga is meant, citta vritti nirodha, means basically citta vritti, all these different modifications within the mind, which are caused by these different little problems which are there, little or big problems, to completely calm them down. You have to really completely undo what you have done through so many lifetimes. You really have to try hard to undo it. But it's not easy. It's not an easy thing. And the mind is very difficult to deal with, because the mind is, you know, first of all, the main problem to deal with the mind is that you don't know how to deal with the mind, because you totally, completely identify yourself with the mind. First of all, even to separate yourself from the mind is very difficult. You know, to see the problems within the mind, you have to separate yourself. Otherwise, you don't see the problems, because you're the problem. And usually that's what it is. We cannot see our own problems because we totally identify with the problems, which is the mind. And we are totally one with the mind. And we cannot really, you know, it's a complete, very difficult process. You have, first of all, you have to take your Atma and you have to look at your mind from a different vantage point, and you somehow or other have to calm it down, and so on and so forth. And, you know, and it's difficult. And even Arjuna, after listening, he was listening and listening and listening and listening and listening and listening. And then ultimately he says, Krishna, tell me what will happen with somebody who does it and then it doesn't work. Because he kind of knew it's not going to work. It's very difficult. And then he says, Krishna, you know, you tell me that I have to calm down my mind, and I have to see it, and I have to really concentrate on the inner self, and I have to really be in samadhi. But how is that possible? It's easy to catch the wind. You know, this is a little wind, and it's very difficult to catch the wind. Arjuna says, it's a hopeless endeavor. You know, the mind is much more turbulent than the wind. You know, it's psh, psh, psh. Because the wind only blows in a very limited space, but the mind blows, you know, all over the place. The mind goes from here to there, from there to here, you know. And here you are, you have to calm it down, right? Good luck. Very, very good proposal. But, you know, how do you do this? It's not that easy. And therefore, the whole discipline is very rigorous. It's rigorous discipline. It's a genius invention. You have to control your breathing, because the breathing process, first of all, it's very intimately connected with the mind. And when your breathing process is more or less under your control, then you can start gradually pratyahara. You can start gradually withdraw your senses. You know, and Hare Krishna, to withdraw the senses from the sense objects. Even the greatest yogis cannot do this. The question was asked once by Kumaras. Kumaras came to Brahma, who is their father, It's 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And he is the creator of this world. And Kumaras are supposed to be the greatest yogis. They are very self-controlled, extremely. They remain, by their yogic power, they remained little boys. They didn't want to grow up because they knew if you grow up, you will have so many problems. You know, hormones will start flowing throughout your body. You will have all kinds of strange ideas within your mind. And they said, no, we'll remain little boys. It's safer. But even they got bewildered. Once they came to Brahma and they said, my dear father, we have been thinking how to do this pratyahara, how to withdraw the senses from the sense objects. And what we realized, that you, the creator of this world, created the senses and the sense objects as the perfect match. The senses and sense objects, they constitute a very perfect kind of combination. You know, the sense object of the sound is perfectly, fit within the sense of hearing. And it's just when the hearing and the sound go together, it's just as if it should be like this. You know, when you listen to a beautiful music, and the beautiful music goes to your ear, it's just, you know, that's it. It's beautiful, and your ear is meant to listen to the beautiful music. Your eyes are meant to see beauty. You know, when you see something beautiful, and we will not go into details of what is beautiful within this world, you know, but we all know what it is. Your eyes go automatically. You don't, you know, your mind cannot even control this. You see some kind of roop, beautiful form, you know, especially if it's half naked. And you just, you know, eyes just go there. You know? You cannot do anything with the eyes. Because the eyes are created in and roop and eyes are created in a complementary way. It's a perfect match. In the same way, all other sense objects and the senses are created in this way. And so Kumara said, you know, how is that possible in principle? If there is an affinity between the senses and sense objects, how you can do this, you know, it's not possible because they're there and they're just, you know, they're already there. So, and Brahma, they said, you have created the senses in a certain way so that they will match with the sense objects. How we're supposed to undo it? And Brahma started scratching his head and he said, I don't know. You're right. This world is created in a certain way and it's unnatural. It's practically almost unnatural to do this, to separate the senses and the sense objects. And that's a very beginning stage. And this is very beginning stage of yoga, pratyahara. You know, pratyahara means, ahara means food. And pratyahara means against the food. It means that you don't feed your senses. You just starve. You know, and you have to starve all your senses. You have to starve, you know, you basically have to block all your senses. Yeah. And then what you will do, you will sleep. Because if the senses are not working, you know, you will snore. Very peacefully. So, and Arjuna says this, Krishna is explaining it to him, not to teach him yoga. Krishna is explaining this Dhyan Yoga of the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita not to tell him. Some people, they say that, look, Krishna is teaching Dhyan Yoga here in Bhagavad Gita, therefore we have to practice Dhyan Yoga. But Krishna is teaching Dhyan Yoga not to tell us to practice Dhyana Yoga, but to tell us that you cannot do this. That's the point of the sixth chapter. And Arjuna says, no, I cannot do this, Krishna, please. Leave me alone. I cannot practice this. And Krishna calms him down and he says, yeah, it's difficult, but it's possible. If you really practice hard, you can do it. Vairagyanacha, Abhyasanacha Vairagyanacha. You can do it through Abhyas, through the practice, and through Vairagyas, through detachment. But it is not easy. It's not easy. Don't even try. You know, you can go to the gym, you know, and stand upside down. But don't call it yoga. You know, you can do gymnastics, but don't call it yoga. Because it's not going to bring you any closer to the Supreme Lord. And therefore, when Krishna finishes this Gita, when he explained to Arjuna the fate of unsuccessful yogi, when he finishes Gita, he says, Yoginam api sarvisham madgatenam taratmana shradavan bhajate yomam same yukta tamau mataha. He is yukta tama. He is the best. Absolutely the best. This is superlative expression in Sanskrit. Yukta tama. The best of the yogis. Yoginam api sarvisham. Out of all the yogis. Out of all possible pilgrims on a spiritual path. Those who practice consciousness of me. Same yukta tama mataha. Yoginam api sarvisham madgatenantaratmana. Whose mind is connected with me. Shradavan bhajate yomam. With shradha. With faith. Who worship me with faith. They are the best one. They are the most firmly and the most intimately connected. And now, of course, the question arises how to achieve this stage. Because when Krishna says this is the best kind of yoga, he doesn't, and this is very important, this chapter is not doesn't start with the question of Arjuna. In other chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, oftentimes Arjuna first asks the question. And then Krishna goes on to answer his question. But here, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the first verse of this seventh chapter, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Krishna continues speaking. In other words, this whole seventh chapter is the explanation of the last verse of the sixth chapter. It's the continuation of the same topic, how to become the best of the yogis. And therefore, in this particular verse, which we are reading today, the first verse of the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Mai asakta manah partha. He answers this particular question, which naturally arises when you hear the last verse of the Bhagavad Gita, of the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The best of the yogis is one who always thinks about Krishna. The best of the yogis is one who is always connected with Krishna in his mind. And therefore Krishna starts off saying, Mai asakta manah partha. You can attach your mind to me. Tachrinu. Now hear how you can do this. Now I will describe to you how to connect your mind with me and how always, 24 hours a day, to be connected with me, no matter what happens with you. How you can be in perfect consciousness, no matter what is going on around you. No matter where you are, whether you are in Himalayas or in Ottawa, it doesn't matter. You can be the perfect yogi. You don't have to go to Himalayas, you don't have to even go to gym. You can be a perfect yogi even at home. Tachrinu. And Prabhupada, he takes this last words of this verse to say that this is the beginning of bhakti yoga. And it's a fact. In the seventh chapter, the main topic of Bhagavad Gita is being described. That's the beginning or starting point of description of bhakti. And where the bhakti starts. Because bhakti is this emotional connection with the Supreme. Why? Let's go a little bit back. And let's answer one question. Why yoga is so difficult? Why such a great yogi as Vishwamitra Muni has to fall down from the yoga? Vishwamitra Muni has been practicing yoga for hundreds and hundreds of years in Himalayas in perfect discipline. He was such a great yogi. He was such a determined person. He has such a willpower. He's practicing there. But then some menaka comes and she just jingles, little, you know, little, how you call it? Nupur, yeah, Nupur. Ankle bells. Little Nupur, you know. And this great yogi, you know, for years he was in meditation, in samadhi, in perfect samadhi. You know, om, om, you know, he was perfectly calm. And little lady comes and din, 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 hello. And here you are. He is at the feet of this lady. You know, he's her dancing dog. You know, he's ready to do whatever she says to him, you know. He says, yeah, you're such a great yogi. Come here, come here. Come close. I like good yogis. Why? There is very important answer to this. Because yoga do not involve you emotionally. Yoga is a discipline which definitely involves some kind of very mystical processes, and it really, you know, it is a very important and genius process, but it doesn't involve you emotionally, ultimately, and therefore it's so difficult. You kind of feel unfulfilled yourself, because emotional side, which is so important for the human being, is not really connected, is not really involved into this process. Once Radhanath Maharaj told a story about one yogi who came to New Vrindavan. He was a yogi who was practicing many, many years in Himalayas. And he came to New Vrindavan and he started and he said, I'm a yogi and I know you are also kind of yogis, but I want to show you what I can. And he started doing all kinds of stuff. You know. He took a bulb, electric bulb, and he smashed this electric bulb into powder, into the dust. And then he took all this powder and ate it. No problem. You know, then... But that's not the greatest thing. Then he took an iron rod. What did he do? How did he do this? He put the iron rod against the wall and he put an eye. You know, he put little cotton between the eye and the iron rod. And, I don't know, anyways, he started, you know, pushing this iron rod in the eye with the great force. And then he took it off and the eye was still there, no problem. You know. And then he went into samadhi. And then he said, is there any doctor among you? And there was some medical doctor. And he will say, now I will die. And you will, by your means, you have to determine that I am dead. I will die now in front of all of you. And then you please tell me, when should I come back to life? And somebody told him, 45 minutes. Yeah, he said, no problem. So he went, he sat down, and he started breathing very deeply. He made a few deep, deep breathes, and then he died. You know, then he dropped. And this doctor, he started taking his pulse. There was no pulse. There was no signs of life whatsoever. He said, medically, this man is dead. If necessary, I can make a certificate and I can stamp it. He is dead. You know, that's it. You know, he's no more. He's gone. That's it. You know, there is no signs of life in this body whatsoever. Then, you know, they were watching and watching and watching for 45 minutes. Exactly 45 minutes. I don't know whether he had an alarm clock in his samadhi state or how did it happen. You know, 45 minutes later, he started breathing again and he opened his eyes and he said, yes, here I am. And then he said, can you make some shows for me? I want to make shows and I want to make money. And they asked him, my dear sir, why do you want money? He said, because I want an American wife. I was practicing yoga in Himalayas too long and now I want a wife in America. Nice American lady as a wife. And the devotee said, no, you please find wife somewhere else. We are not going to help you in this regard. But the point here is that one of the reasons why yoga is so difficult, why the way to establish your connection with the Supreme through yoga is so difficult, because it's not involving you emotionally. And here Krishna says, here I am going to really disclose to you the way how to be involved with me, how to be connected with me. But the way to be connected with me is only through bhakti. Because bhakti means your heart melts. Bhakti means you love God. Bhakti means... I saw Ramanuja here, and I was inspired by his murti to tell a story about Ramanuja. There is a very interesting story about Yamunacharya. Yes, I believe it's in Yamunacharya. Yeah, I think it's Yamunacharya. Because Nathamuni, who is the great Acharya, the first Acharya in this line of Sri Sampradaya, he left two disciples. And one disciple was, of course, Rama Mishra, who was... actually, he was a disciple of a disciple. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So he knew that Yamuna is coming, that a great successor, Yamunacharya, is coming. And he left two disciples, and to one of the disciples he told, you teach him bhakti. And to another of his disciple was a great yogi, and he said, you teach the grand son of mine, Yamunacharya, yoga. So that was the direct instruction of Nathamuni to his disciple, that he's supposed to disclose the secrets of yoga to the future Yamunacharya. And in the meantime, he was sitting there. He was sitting and meditating and meditating and meditating. Many, many years passed. Probably more than 100 of years. So anyway, many, many years passed. Then, ultimately, there was a meeting between this disciple and Yamunacharya. Yamunacharya came. When Yamunacharya already became an Acharya in this line, he came to meet with this disciple of Nathamuni, who is a great yogi. And somebody took him to him, and they said, it's very difficult to meet with him because he's always in samadhi. He always sits there and he's always in samadhi, and he rarely comes to the external consciousness. Rarely you can really drag him out of his samadhi into the external world. So they come, and he's sitting in a room. And Yamunacharya, he stands in front of the room with great awe and reverence, because inside the room somebody is in samadhi. And all of a sudden, the voice, the thunderous voice, is coming from this room. Who is there behind this? Who is disturbing my samadhi? Who is completely, you know, it must be some descendant of Nathamuni. I swear, somebody who belongs to my great venerable master is behind the wall. And Yamunacharya comes to his room and says, yes, here I am. My dear sir, how did you know that I'm here? And why did you come out from the samadhi? How did I disturb your samadhi, your connection or your mystic trance with the Supreme? And this man says, you know, I'm a great yogi. And when I go into samadhi, I see the Supreme Lord right in front of me. She's just sitting in front of me. Because my samadhi is so deep that I can see the Lord in front of me, and I look at the Lord. And my samadhi is nothing else but looking at the Lord. And he's so beautiful. Then I can look at him for years in a row. You know, he's so beautiful. And he looks at me. And here we are, we're sitting together, and we're a perfect match. You know, he's looking at me, and he's wondering what this yogi is doing, you know. Mm-hmm. He's so absorbed in me, and I'm looking at him, and I'm wondering how one can be so beautiful, you know. And we're looking and looking and looking, and this is my samadhi. And when you came, we were sitting together with the Lord, and He was looking at me and I was looking at Him. And then all of a sudden, I saw Him looking around and trying to, you know, trying to look at you. And I realized there must be some much more powerful yogi behind this wall. Therefore, my Lord is distracted. He doesn't want to see me anymore. He wants to see you. I saw somebody who is much more connected with my Lord, who is much more emotionally involved with my Lord, who is much has stronger tie with my Lord. Because your love is so strong that my Lord, you know, he's just looking at you. He doesn't want to see me anymore. He wants to see you. And then I realized this must be some descendant of my great master, Natha Muni, who told me to teach you yoga. Do you want me to teach you yoga? He said, no, I don't want you to teach me yoga because I already know what yoga is. Yoga means to be emotionally involved with the Lord, to be totally absorbed. This Maya Sakta Manak Partha, this absorption of the mind in the Lord can only be possible when you're emotionally involved. And Krishna says here, Tat Srinu, please hear how to achieve this stage. And Srila Prabhupada, he takes this indication and he says, this is the beginning of real yoga. This is the beginning of bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga starts with what? It starts with hearing. Sravanam is the most important process, is the foundation of bhakti yoga. And the result of Sravanam is described in this verse, Maya Sakta Manak Partha Yogam Yunjam Madashrayaha Asamshayam Samagramam Yathag Yasyasi Tachrinu. He said, if you want to know me perfectly, if you are after complete, full knowledge of the Lord, of the Supreme Truth, you have to hear and you have to start the process of yoga through the engaging your ears in this mystic process. And as a result of this, you will get your mind attached to the Lord, Maya Sakta Manah Partha, Yogam Yunjam Madashrayaha. You will establish this connection and Madashrayaha, you will take shelter of me. Asamshayam Samagramam, all your doubts will be totally destroyed. Your mind will be completely free from all the doubts. In other words, you will have complete realization of the Lord in front of you. Yogam yunjam madashraha samshayam samagramam yathag yasyasi. How to know this? Please hear. So, here, the most important process is being described of hearing. And it is said also in Niti Shastra that the dog sees the world through the nose. You know, the dog, the most developed sense of a dog is a nose. Basically, his whole face is a big nose. There's nothing else. There's not much else going on. It's just a big nose. And his nose is very sensitive, you know. And he really sees the world through the nose. You know, he just, you know, and he comes to somebody. You know, that's his interaction with the world. And that gives him some kind of understanding of the world, very limited understanding, but he knows something about this world. Then it's said in this Niti Shastra verse that materialist, he sees the world through the eye. You know, for the materialist, the main sense, the main perception, the main understanding is the eye. Therefore, the knowledge, empiric knowledge, is basically the knowledge which you gather through the eye. If you take modern science, the whole knowledge of the modern science is basically the pratyaksha. Pratyaksha means through your eyes. Pratyaksha. It's through the eyes which you can, you know. And this is, we can see, this is the main, this is dominant, predominant process of knowledge in this world, pratyaksha, empiric science. But in the same verse of Niti Shastra, it is said that the spiritualist, the somebody who has developed his spiritual intelligence. He sees the world through the ear. The ear is a very special sense which can, in reality, bring you much higher. Eye is a very unique sense because the information which you gather through eye is immense. You know, if we try to, I don't know, is somebody of you is a computer specialist? Yes, okay. So there is this big problem in computer science of the recognition, you know, how to teach computers to recognize different shapes and forms. It's very difficult because, you know, to distinguish between one subject matter, between one, you know, object and another object of this world is very difficult. You know, how to learn, how to teach computer, you know, to recognize an apple. It's a big problem.
They call it image processing.
Yeah. So, you know, because you have apples of all kinds of different kinds of shapes and forms and colors and this and that. They're so variegated. But we know this all apples. You know, how do we know this all apples? It's very difficult, you know, but we know this apple. For human being, it's a simple task. But the point here is that the eye is a very unique sense organ because the information which we gather through the eyes is immense, you know. At this particular moment, when we see around, you know, if we try to, you know, what will be the size of the file of the information which we, you know, without any difficulties now see, you know. It's immense, you know, so many different shapes and shades and colors and this and that. And we perfectly know this because this is the drum and this is the sofa, you know, and we know what it is. This is all eyes. And this way, eyes is unique. It gives you unique information about the world, but it also bewilders you completely because of too much information. Because of too much, you know, too much is going on within this world, and you are totally bewildered. You know, you look here and you look there, and but the ear, if we compare these two senses, the sense of hearing and the sense of vision, of eyesight, there is a very unique distinction between one and another one. Eyes give you a wide range, immense amount of information at once. When you hear, the information is much more, it's much more meager. It's very little, you know. When you hear the voice, it's very little information is there. But at the same time, it really has the power to concentrate your mind. And that's a very important point. Like, for example, the advertisements, they work, they're based on this principle. What is advertisement? What is it all about? You see some kind of completely stupid picture, you know, some kind of commercial there. Stupid kind of stuff. But then there has to be what? The name of the product. And that's the essence of all. You do all kinds of stuff there, but then, you know, you get the essence, the brand, the name. And then next time, somehow or other, this name, this sound, sticks within your mind. And then next time, you go to a shop, and you see the whole kind of, let's say, juices, you know. And your mind automatically, somehow or other, is attracted to the juice. Which name you heard in the commercial? You heard this name in the commercial, and then your mind is just, you know, phew, it's there. So the sound is there to concentrate your mind. It really, out of the wide range of the varieties of different products or whatever, the sound is there to really to lead your mind to a certain destination. Actually, that's the basis of the hearing process, and basically that's the basis of the spiritual practice. You know, why do we chant Hare Krishna mantra? Why do we chant mantras at all? Why do people chant mantras? Mantras are certain vibrations. And these certain vibrations are there to concentrate our mind and to connect our mind with the object of this vibration. As much as the names in this world are there to connect our mind with the object of this name. If, let's imagine that there are different kinds of, you know, productions in this world, but there is no names, there is no brand. You know, this juice and this juice and this juice, but there is no brand. You know, you would be bewildered. You don't know what to choose. The name is there to really lead your mind to this object. The sound is there to connect your mind with this object, really, to make this connection. And therefore, in the ancient Vedic science, there is the science of chanting japa. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that out of all the sacrifices, out of different kinds of sacrifices, I am what? I am japa. I am japa yagya. Among all the yagyas, the greatest yagya is japa yagya, or chanting the name of God, or chanting sacred syllable Om, you know. Because immediately your mind takes a completely different shape, or completely different process takes place within your mind. We can try it. We can just chant together Om. We can just, you know, sit down very calmly and observe the changes within the mind. We can close our eyes. Let's close it. Let's do it. Let's do some chanting. Let's close our eyes. Let's really deeply concentrate our consciousness within. And then let's produce the sound Aum. Let's take a deep breath. That's it. Immediately you can feel the changes, right? Your mind is totally calmed. And this is the vibration, the sound, which ultimately can bring you to a deeper state of consciousness. Through the vibrations. Because ultimately, how the brain works. Okay. I think I should stop very soon, otherwise your brain will stop working altogether.
You can continue. It's
still working.
It's condensed.
Is it possible to accept love God as well as not restraining your senses?
As with not? With what?
Not restraining your senses.
Okay, I'll come to this. Let me finish my topic. No, it's okay. Let me finish this little topic. Because I'm a scientist by background, so I will tell you a few scientific things. Ultimately, the mind, the brain, there is brain waves, right? And there are basically four kinds of brain waves. The scientist, neuroscience, knows about four kinds of brain waves with a certain frequency. I will come to your question a little later. When we are in a wakeful state, when we are awake, the frequency of the brain wave is called beta wave, and this beta wave is one frequency. Then when we are in a dreaming state, then the frequency is less, and this is called alpha. And then there is theta and some more, whatever. Delta, yeah. Theta and delta. When we are in a very deep sleep, in a very deep sleep or in a very deep meditation, then there is this theta wave, and then when we are in complete samadhi, and the only the deepest state of our consciousness, the deepest state of samadhi, which is the goal of yoga, is called this delta wave, which is this state of consciousness where the mind is totally calm, and when the mystic experience comes to you. And ultimately, there is a, as I said, there is a certain frequency of these waves, brain waves. The mantras are there because they're ultimately bringing frequency of your mind into a certain range. We just had this experience now. Recently, just a couple of minutes ago, we had this experience when the mind was calmed down just by certain frequency of the sound. Right? And it is explained, those people who are doing this kind of yoga, who are meditating on the sound, and this is what is called japa yagya, meditation on the sound, they are explaining that when you say ah, in this, let's analyze this aum sound, or om, the sound om, first is ah, and ah goes somewhere here in Svadhisthana chakra, or even deeper in Muladhara chakra, and ah corresponds to the wakeful state of the consciousness. It's when we are awake, this is ah, when we say ah, therefore this is the first letter of the alphabet, ah, you know, ah is the main sound. This is the sound or the frequency of the wakeful state of our consciousness. Then you say oo, aum. Yeah, oo, you can even feel the vibration goes deeper. It comes to your heart. Actually, oo